Greetings, everyone. This is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard the Ascension. Thank you for choosing Soul Excursions for your tour today. We are currently the only space tourism offering destinations to the outer solar system, so you're in for quite a treat today. Our tour will consist of flybys of Jupiter and its four largest moons, which are referred to as the Galilean moons. Galileo was also the first to discover Saturn's rings, which he described as ears in his notes. Now that all of our passengers are aboard, the attendants will make a quick inspection of the cabin before we undock from the Orbital Hotel. The Ascension is the first commercial craft to be manufactured with a new type of transparent composite material, essentially turning the entire passenger cabin into one big viewing window. I'm hearing now that traffic control has queued us in a holding orbit for the Alcubierre drive, so we should be underway in just a few minutes. I'm sure most of you are familiar with this transportation system, but I'll explain quickly for those who do not understand how it works. The drive is a large torus or ring, about 20 kilometers in diameter. The drive works by bending space-time around the craft, allowing it to travel like a surfer on the crest of a wave. The energy which powers the drive is absorbed from irregularities in the quantum foam which surround the ring. The Alcubierre drive on the other end will intercept and accelerate us to the correct velocity for an intercept with Jupiter's sphere of influence. There are currently three drive units in the outer system, with two more in development. So I hope you'll join us when the Neptune and Pluto rings are operational. All right, folks, it looks like we're up next. Before the development of the drive, it took regular propulsion methods about 6 years to reach the Jovian system. Now it takes about 6 microseconds. And we're here. As you can see, it happens faster than the blink of an eye. If you look out the port side, you'll get your first look at the red-eyed king of the planets. Our first destination will be Jupiter itself. The ship needs to slow down enough to enter an orbit around the planet. In order to accomplish this, we perform a maneuver called aerobraking. This technique has been used for as long as humanity has been exploring space. When an object enters the atmosphere of a planet, the friction from the molecules impart a small force which decelerates it. This is the reason that meteors glow when they enter the atmosphere back home. The only downside is that it's incredibly easy to burn up unless a special type of heat shield is used. We are entering Jupiter's radiation zone, which is created by the planet's magnetic field. Even at this distance, if you were outside in a spacesuit, you'd be instantly cooked by the radiation. Now we are close enough to distinguish Jupiter's famous bands. These are created by intense jet streams of ammonia, which flow in opposite directions. The darker, orange bands are called belts, while the lighter ones are referred to as zones. They are organized by convection currents. Belts are made up of cooler air, as opposed to zones, which are warmer. It's also theorized that the planet's internal magnetic structure may have an influence on the shape and direction of the bands. We will be passing through between the South Equatorial Belt and the Tropical Zone, the two regions which border the Great Red Spot. The spot is actually a large pressure system which is believed to have existed for nearly 400 years. As you can see, the spot is located above the surrounding clouds, which is due to the fact that it's actually colder than its surroundings. Fun fact, you can fit 3 of our Earths inside the Great Red Spot. We have officially entered Jupiter's atmosphere. At the moment, we are skimming the outer clouds. Our trajectory will take us deeper into the atmosphere, where the clouds are denser. We will be experiencing some turbulence, so it's best to buckle up. Yes, do you have a question? Ah, of course. Well, you can't actually walk on Jupiter because it doesn't have a terrestrial surface like Earth. The easiest way to imagine the structure of Jupiter is to compare it to an onion. Jupiter is composed of mostly hydrogen and helium gases. Below the outer atmosphere, there's a region of dark hydrogen. This layer is something between a liquid and a gas. It's created from the atmospheric pressure and gravity. The reason it's referred to as dark is due to the fact that it doesn't transmit or reflect light aside from infrared. Eventually, the pressure and gravity become so intense that a layer of a special type of liquid called metallic hydrogen is formed. Beyond this metallic ocean is a rocky core, most likely composed of silicates and heavier elements. We have officially entered the King's Royal Court. Our first stop will be Io, the innermost of the four Galilean moons and most volcanically active body in the solar system. There are gravitational interactions between Jupiter and its moons, similar to the way that our own moon creates tides back on Earth. The tidal forces created by Jupiter's gravity stretch and squeeze the moons, which create friction and heat within their internal structure. This is why most of the Jovian moons are seismically active. The amount of radiation around Io is about 2.2 million times more than we receive back home on Earth, so I wouldn't recommend going out for a stroll. As we continue our approach, you should be able to make out the plumes of sulfuric material which are ejected from the volcanoes on the surface. Many of these are actually much taller than Mount Everest. After the debris from these eruptions cools, it falls back to the surface as ice, which gives the moon its unique yellow coloration. Some of the volcanoes are violent enough to spew material out of Io's orbit. This material interacts with Jupiter's magnetic field and creates a faint ring of plasma around the planet. Next on our list of royal subjects is my personal favorite. If you've never heard of Europa before, then you might be surprised to learn that it may have the potential to harbor life. As you can see, Europa resembles a dirty snowball. The outermost layer is composed of a sheet of ice, ranging from between 10 to 30 kilometers in thickness. Underneath the ice is a massive ocean of liquid water. Those small lines which cover the surface are called lineae. They are fractures in the ice layer, created by the tidal flexing we discussed earlier. It's similar to plate tectonics back on Earth. Fissures created by the tides allow for warmer water beneath to be exposed to space, whereupon it cools and freezes once more. The brown discolorations are created by minerals which are carried to the surface by currents of warm water. The real issue with the hypothesis that life could evolve within Europa's oceans is the radiation it receives from Jupiter. While not as bad as Io, Europa still experiences about 320,000 times the amount of radiation compared to our standard dosage on Earth. Although the thickness of the ice might assist in reducing that dosage. Our next destination is Ganymede, the largest moon in the solar system. It's actually larger than Mercury, but only about half as massive. Ganymede is interesting as it is composed of alternating layers of ice and liquid, which are distinguished by their salinity, or how salty they are. Moon systems are interesting because they're like mini solar systems. Most stars are born when a large cloud of molecular gases is disturbed. This disruption can be caused by many things, such as the birth of a neighboring star or a nearby supernova. But once the effect is triggered, the cloud begins to collapse in on itself. As the core becomes more massive, it begins to spin and form something called a protoplanetary disk. The heavier elements, which are more massive, will end up closer to the star, while the lighter elements, like hydrogen and helium, will accumulate away from the star. That's why most rocky planets are closer to their stars, while typical gas giants, such as Jupiter, are located beyond the frost point. The abundance of lighter elements is also the reason that the gas giants are much larger. A star is born once its gravity is great enough to achieve nuclear fission within the core. Once this happens, the solar wind will blow away all of the remaining dust and debris. Callisto will be the last stop on our tour today. It is located outside of Jupiter's primary radiation belt, so it only receives about 5 times the radiation dosage we experience back on Earth. If you couldn't tell by looking, Callisto has the most heavily cratered surface in the solar system. The crater we're passing now is called Valhalla and measures over 1,800 kilometers in diameter. The outer layer of Callisto is made up of rock and ice, which gives it a darker appearance. When an object hits the surface of the moon, ice shards are sent flying all around the impact zone. These crystals catch the light and reflect it back, like snow. That's the reason they stand in contrast to the darker surface. Callisto is like the meat shield of the Galilean moons. Since it's the outermost of the larger moons, it has a greater opportunity to intercept any incoming asteroids. This is similar to how our own moon protects Earth, like a goalie in soccer. Well, folks, that's all for our tour today. Thanks again for choosing Sol Excursions. We hope to see more of you in our future tours.